central bank digital currencies, digital IDs, artificial intelligence, and big tech surveillance. What does our digital future really look like? Join me, Alastair Harding, for a look into our digital future every Wednesday on Paul Brennan's Breakfast Show, right here on Reality Check Radio. Welcome to Our Digital Future on Reality Check Radio. My name is Alastair Harding, and this week on Our Digital Future, I have an interview with well-known investment banker and former US public official Catherine Austin Fitts. In her career, Catherine Austin Fitts has gone from a darling of Wall Street who revitalized the New York subway system by raising billions of dollars through bond sales before becoming a highly thought-of government housing administrator in the George Bush Senior administration. She then became a person to be held at arm's length due to her revelations in a paper she co-authored about the huge fraud of $21 trillion worth of unauthorized spending by the U.S. Department of Defense and the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. She's also sat on the boards of countless organizations, from universities to churches to investment banks and even Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s Children's Health Defense. But today she runs the Solari Report, a private company helping people build financial freedom and personal wealth. And today she joins me now on Our Digital Future on Reality Check Radio. So welcome, Catherine Austin Fitts. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, well, thank you very much. When I saw this series that you're doing, I said, oh, I'd love to be a part of that.
Well, we're very, very happy to have you. So we're talking at the moment about CBDCs. And recently we've heard from our central bank here in New Zealand, our Reserve Bank, and they're investigating bringing in a CBDC. And so that's what we're talking about at the moment on Reality Check Radio for our digital future. Now, currently they're asking for submissions on the design and policy requirements for a CBDC. And they tell us that a CBDC is a tool of financial inclusion. They say that it's going to be private and convenient and it's going to give us choice and it's going to support inclusion and all of that sounds really amazing. But I know you're a woman who's worked in investment banks and worked for the government, so you bring a vast amount of knowledge in this conversation on so many different levels. So to start us off, can you give us a description of what you think a CBDC is? Is it all those things that our Reserve Bank has been telling us?
So if you look at a CBDC system and where it will eventually go, because when you implement a CBDC system, it will evolve. But if you look at the CBDC system, there's what it really is and what it's intended to do. And then there's a whole world of fluff on how you sell it. Okay? So what you just described to me are the various packages and things being used to market it. But if we go to the root of what it is and what it's intended to be a total control system, which I would describe as slavery.
That's a pretty strong word.
Right.
Why slavery?
Well, let me just say, before we did this interview, I went back and read, I'd looked at it when it first came out, but read Stepping Back from the Brink, the Programmable Ledger. Which is a pretty serious comment on the CBDC system. And this is written, so this is a comment on the New Zealand plans for a CBDC. And it's written by people who are reasonable, who are well-educated, who are extremely intelligent, who are writing as if they're talking to other people who are intelligent and reasonable. And if you look at the people who traditionally have governed or managed the Bank of New Zealand or the New Zealand banking establishment, that's how they appear. Mm. If you look at the people behind the central bankers who want and are pushing the system, they have no intention of being reasonable. And digital technology allows them to reset the economy and reset the governance and management system on planet Earth to a wholly new system. And if you've grown up in a country like New Zealand is very beautiful. New Zealand, the population is exceptionally literate, very grounded, very entrepreneurial and hardworking. If you've grown up in a culture like that under a governance that has a democratic process, you cannot fathom where these people want to go. because it's so alien. It's a little bit like asking a chicken to understand what the farmer is up to when he's literally using digital technology to re-engineer his farm.
You're talking about a coup.
Yes. So let me describe what the coup d'etat is. For in the Western world, so in the G7 countries, in the many of the G20 countries, certainly in the Commonwealth countries, of which New Zealand is one, and it's very similar if you look at the CBDCs being implemented in New Zealand, Australia, Canada, and in the key Commonwealth countries. You've had a process where the bankers, it's a balance of power, the bankers control monetary policy, and the people's representatives through an elective process, the legislature, and the executive branch control fiscal policy. And fiscal policy generates the rules and regulations by which we live day to day. And what this technology allows the bankers to do is for monetary policy using CBDC combined with a social credit system and a digital ID to basically extinguish over time the legislature and the executive branch. You can make up through smart contracts and programmability all the rules and regulations. So you can implement laws and regulations through the money, which is controlled by monetary policy, and you can enforce it. And so literally the monetary side of the house can take over and run the legislative and the fiscal side of the house. And at the very root of that, Alistair, is taxation without representation. Now I can just go into your bank account, and if I want to raise taxes, I just raise it and take it out because I have complete and utter control of your money, and I can enforce in unbelievably granular ways. And if you know, it was really funny in 2020, John Titus, who runs he and I do our Money and Market show on the Solari Report, decided that we would together listen. He was in the heartland in America. I was in the Netherlands, where I am now. We would listen to a panel done by the IMF that had Augustine Karstens, the general manager of the BIS, the Bank of International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland, which is the central bank of central banks, and Jay Powell, who runs the Federal Reserve. So they were doing a panel at the IMF, and we said, well, let's watch it. Now, I was trained from a very early age to be a central banker. And in fact, I was asked to be a governor of the Federal Reserve, which I declined. So I've never been a central banker, but I was basically trained to be a central banker. This was the first time in my life. So John and I are online listening to Augustine Karstens talk. This was the first time I ever heard a central banker tell the truth to the public. And I fell out of my chair. I was chatting with John. I said, oh my God, did he really just say it? And John said, don't worry, I clipped it. We got it. So it's only a minute long. I'm a great believer in short, but this is the first time Catherine ever saw a central banker tell you the truth. And it was about why Augustine Karstens loves CBDCs. So maybe we could run it.
Okay, so we have that prepared here to listen to. Here's Augustine Karstens, the general manager of the Bank of International Settlements, and this is what he has to say about the difference between a CBDC and cash.
Aren't our analysis on CBDC, in particular for the use of general to the general use, we tend to establish the equivalence with cash, and there is a huge difference there. For example, in cash, we don't know, for example, who is using a $100 bill today. We don't know who is using a 1,000 peso bill today. A key difference with the CBDC is that central bank will have absolute control on the rules and regulations that will determine the use of that expression of central bank liability. And also, we will have the technology to enforce that. Those two issues are extremely important, and that makes a huge difference with respect to what cash is.
Okay, so that was Augustine Karstens, the general manager of the Bank of International Settlements, saying, I quote, "The key difference with the CBDC is that the central bank will have complete control." And it was also the first time, Catherine, I just heard you say, it was the first time you'd heard a central banker tell the truth. Is that correct?
Tell the truth to the public. Yeah, I've heard central bankers tell the truth, but I've never heard one tell it to the public like that. And you should have seen, Alistair, you should have seen Jay Powell's face. he went white as a sheet because he's thinking, I got 325 million Americans and there are more than 325 million guns owned privately by Americans. And I need authorizing legislation to do this. And Augustine, will you please shut up because you're making my life much more difficult. It was hysterical.
One of the things I loved about that clip was the contrast between what Augustine Karsten said there alongside what our Reserve Bank has said here in New Zealand. They put out an issues paper back in 2021 and they reported that feedback had told them that most people don't want to lose cash. And the Reserve Bank told us that they have no intention of stopping cash in this country. And then they say, I would say somewhat cynically, they renamed their CBDC product, what they are proposing, they renamed it as digital cash. And I suppose it was sort of to soften the blow somewhat, to tell us that all this, the CBDC stuff, is as good as cash. But as we just heard from the general manager of the Bank of International Settlements, this is not cash, is it?
No, it's total control. It's total control. So we did one of the big studies we just published is called Pharma Food, and it's on lab-grown meat and synthetic food. And it's one of the most frightening things we've ever published. And I thought it would be very unpopular. And it turned out to be wildly popular because all the fresh food people are using it to market. And we had a wonderful Dutch reporter, Elsa van Hamelen, write it for us. And when I was reading it, I said to Elsa, you know, there's no way that you can get a human being to eat this stuff. I mean, when you understand how synthetically grown meat is made, you can't. The great thing about studying how it's made is if you're on a diet, you won't eat for a week. I mean, it's really effective for dieting. But I said, you know, CBDC is the marketing program for lab grown meat. Mm. The way they're going to get you to eat this stuff is they're basically going to smart contract your money so that the only food you can buy is lab-grown meat that they make in their manufacturing plants. I mean, this is how you move the entire agricultural industry into publicly traded stocks. But the only way you could market it is with total control of your money. So let's go back to the lockdowns, okay? And we're going to watch a former governor of the Bank of China explained programmability. But let's go back to the lockdowns. If I don't want you leaving your house, it's really easy to enforce this. I can simply say your money won't work. You know, you can't, you can shop online and have it delivered, but your money won't work outside of your home. You can't buy gas. You can't buy food. You can't travel. Your money won't work because it's programmed. And the reality is with AI and software, and we need to talk about that whole infrastructure, but with AI and software, they can manage you one person at a time. So, you know, the rules that can be applied to you, Alistair, are totally different than the rules that can be applied to your wife. So with the social credit system, if your wife is behaving better than you, you know, they will custom design the controls.
So that's the programmability and the smart contracts part of the CBDC, isn't it?
Right. And I'll tell you the challenge for the governors of the Bank of New Zealand. The challenge is ultimately this entire system can be run from Basel, Switzerland. How do they engineer this system in New Zealand so that they maintain control in New Zealand? And one of the big fights that's going on. So last September, the G20 met in New Delhi and announced under the leadership of the Indian finance minister that everybody in the G20 is on board. So that's Russia, that's China, that's India. They're on board for the BIS system of digital IDs and CBDCs. But the problem within that is how is every one of those countries, and this is a big issue for China and Russia, you know, how do we make sure the middle management is Chinese and Russian? Because ultimately, the middle management can just be, once you've got this implemented, they can be, you know, basically engineered out. You can run it from Basel, Switzerland, which can be run by, you know, Lockheed Martin and BlackRock.
Okay, so now we're going to have a listen to another clip. This is a former central banker from China, the IMF's deputy managing director, a man named Bo Li.
Bo Li. So let me just explain. Bo Li was at the Bank of China and then went to the IMF, and he's deputy managing director. That what you just heard from Karsten's was in 2020. So this is Bo Lee at an IMF panel. He's a deputy managing director of the IMF, and he's talking about the programmability of money at a panel in 2023, last year.
Okay, here we go.
Financial inclusion is through what we call programmability. That is, CBDC can allow government agencies and private sector players to program, to create smart contract, to allow targeted policy functions. For example, welfare payment. For example, consumption coupon. For example, food stamp. By programming CBDC, those money can be precisely targeted for what kind of people can own and what kind of use this money can be utilized, for example, for food. So this potential programmability can help government agencies to precisely target their support to those people who need support. So that way can also improve financial inclusion.
Okay, so that was Bo Lee, a former Chinese central banker who's now the IMF's deputy managing director. And again, they're saying the quiet part out loud, aren't they, Catherine? His words were that by programming your CBDC, they can program and control what kind of people can own a CBDC and what they can spend it on.
It's not their money, because if you listen to Augustine Carson's, he said that it was an expression of central bank liability. Mm. It's their money, not your money. And they will tell you when and how you can use it. And they're very clear, it's their money, you use it, and they can dictate highly complex terms of when and how you can use your money, and they can change them all the time.
What is startling about these clips, Catherine, that you're sharing with me, is that these are the words of the people in charge. These aren't the grumblings of disgruntled people in dark corners of the dark web. The first one you shared with us was the head of the Bank of International Settlements, Augustine Carstens. This one was the deputy managing director of the IMF, Bo Lee. These are the people in charge, and they're admitting that what we're talking about is not some conspiracy theory. It's actually true.
So the central bankers, you know, one of the beauties of the system is they believe it's imperative to tell you what they're going to do before they do it, and to get you to help to implement what they're going to do, because then they can say, well, you know, we told you what we're going to do and you helped us do it. It's part of making sure that the system remains credible and has popular support. And so that's why, you know, if you look at where CBDC will start and then where it will evolve and go, you know, there will be a whole evolution. There's no way they can tell you what they're going to do now, because then you're never going to go along. And the reality is, it's very hard for people who've lived in a balance of power system between the bankers and the people to fathom that anybody would want to use digital technology to implement a system like this. And part of it is they've now built a model. You know, traditionally, the model that we've all grown up with is sort of the Bretton Woods trading system, is a model where as the population grows, the top guys make more money. They make money from the growth of the population. They've now created a model where they can make more money by shrinking the population. And what we need to fathom is they perceive total control and a reduced population as something that can work very, very successfully for them.
Okay, so the other big problem that I'd like to talk about about the CBDCs is that it's the end of our privacy. And this comes from the fact that everything we do, every place we spend our money, it all gets logged. And in the case of a CBDC, my understanding is that that means every transaction will be logged both in a domestic ledger for domestic transactions and in a ledger for international settlements as well for global transactions. Is that correct?
Right. So you're talking about a total surveillance system for part of the transaction system. So let me step back, because it's important to understand there are going to be two or more systems. So if you look at the planet right now, it's run by what one of our hosts at Solaria Report calls the rackets. And basically, organized crime and warfare are the two most profitable businesses on the planet. Historically, the most profitable business is slavery, and that's where we're going here. But right now, it's organized crime and warfare. And part of that organized crime and warfare is a collateral system where there's far more collateral promise to investors than exists on the planet. So part of the challenge the central bankers have in a unified ledger system is you have so much collateral fraud, you can't integrate into a unified ledger system, essentially, unless you grab all the assets on the planet, among other things. It's why the World Economic Forum says it's 2030 and you have no assets, because they're planning on, you know, part of the coup is to end property rights and take the assets. But what they need is they need a system where the common people have a closed database, unified ledger system, but they have open database systems that can be manipulated and changed to deal with essentially running and maintaining the rackets. Because in theory, if you look at all the laws, for example, for money laundering, you can't maintain the rackets in a unified ledger system. But obviously, you want to continue to maintain the ledgers, the rackets, and ultimately merge them in. But you need an open database system. So part of the inequality is you, my friend, have a closed database system and have to have total integrity and total transparency to us. Because it's a one-way mirror. It's not a two-way mirror. It's a one-way mirror. They can see everything we're doing. We can't see what we're doing, and we can't see what they're doing. But they have an open database system. So and so it's going to be there's going to be two or more ledgers.
Who's going to run that?
Okay, well, that's the magical question.
Is that the IMF or the BIS, or who is that?
So the BIS is leading the implementation. And they're doing it with the World Bank, which is running the fast payment implementation, and the IMF, which seems to be facilitating all sorts of different conversations. And remember, the IMF and World Bank are working on getting control of the equity ownership and assets as they go. They've been doing that for decades. So the important thing to understand, and the One Health at the UN is also very important. So if you look at the group of the UN, the World Health Organization, the IMF, the World Bank, and the BIS, they're running the system, or they're running the implementation. And the important thing to understand about that system, Alistair, is these are all organizations who enjoy sovereign immunity. They are not subject to the laws. We've had a big push in the US where legislatures are now passing laws saying the WEF, the WHO, the UN and these different organizations have no jurisdiction in Louisiana or Oklahoma to try and push back and ensure that they don't have jurisdiction. But because they operate under sovereign immunity, they can do things in secret, and they can insist that the enforcement operations in different jurisdictions allow them and the people they're protecting to basically break the law and run the financial system in criminal ways. Okay, so they're very important, but what they do is they then, using their control of trade and credit globally and working with the central banks in the different countries who have been giving them sovereign immunity to operate now within the hubs that they've created around the world, those countries will then display or communicate what they're implementing as national law. The key marketing arm will come in and be presented as a national law. So, for example, Jay Powell has said he needs authorizing legislation to do CBDCs, and it's one of the reasons they've tried for decades to get rid of the Constitution. The Constitution is a real stopper to doing CBDC in the U.S.
Okay, so let's move on to the last clip that you have for us today. And to introduce it, I just want to go back to last week's episode of Our Digital Future, when Michael Riedel, a former Reserve banker here in New Zealand who also has experience in central banks in Zambia and in Papua New Guinea, and he told me that he doesn't see the case for a CBDC. And in this clip we're about to hear, it's a man named Neil Kashkari. He's the president of the Minneapolis Federal Reserve, which is one of the 12 Federal Reserve banks across the United States, so a very powerful man. And in this clip, he explains he doesn't see any real value in a CBDC either, just the same way that Michael Riedel told me on this show last week. In fact, Neil Kashkari says he sees something far more sinister.
Right. So this is one of the 12 top central bankers in the United States, one of the presidents of the 12 Fed banks at 2023 at Columbia University, telling you that we can't let this happen.
Okay, let's have a listen.
I keep asking anybody at the Fed or outside of the Fed to explain to me what problem this is solving. I can send anybody in this room $5 with Venmo right now. Right? No, seriously. So what is it that a CBDC could do that Venmo can't do? And all I get is a bunch of hand waving. I get a bunch, well, maybe it's better for financial inclusion. Maybe it's better for cross-border remittances. Maybe. Is there any evidence that it is? And, you know, they say, well, what about China? China's doing it. Well, I can see why China would do it. If they want to monitor every one of your transactions, you could do that with a central bank digital currency. You can't do that with Venmo. If you want to impose negative interest rates, you could do that with a central bank digital currency. You can't do that with Venmo. And if you want to directly tax customer accounts, you could do that with a central bank digital currency. You can't do that with Venmo. So I get why China would be interested. Why would the American people be for that?
So that's Neil Kashkari, the president of the Minneapolis Federal Reserve, one of 12 Federal Reserve banks across the United States. And he's saying that the only argument for a CBDC is actually control.
Right. So if I was Mr. Global and I had, you know, in the 90s said I can do a going direct reset or I can do a building wealth reset. So a going direct reset, my way of resetting the system is to move to total control, use digital technology, and basically the bankers take over the fiscal side of the house and move to a totalitarian system. You know, or I can do a building wealth, you know, and once I decide I'm going to do going direct, and remember they voted at Jackson Hole, the G7 bankers voted on the going direct reset at Jackson Hole in 2019 and have proceeded ever since. If I've decided to do that, I absolutely want a CBDC. I want that total control because I am currently managing enormous amounts of collateral fraud in the financial system. And I have to do a reset. And the only way to do a reset, you know, if I'm going to do it in a going direct reset, is to move to total control. So it works for the central bankers and the people who basically own and manage the central banks. It does not work for anybody else. It's the end of human liberty, period, end of discussion. This is your Braveheart moment, okay?
One of the things that could stop all of this, though, is that there are good human beings inside these organizations, inside the banks and the central banks, real people who don't actually want to be slaves. And I notice also, when I say that, I also notice that there are about 8 or 9 US states that have passed laws effectively banning CBDCs. I also see recently that the US House of Representatives have passed a bill that outlaws a digital dollar. It's not passed the Senate yet, and it might not. But then also around the world, countries like Denmark and Finland, and I also believe Japan is one of them as well, who are no longer pursuing the CBDC. These are all signs that the central bankers trying to implement the CBDCs aren't having it their own way, isn't it?
So I believe ultimately this is not going to work. The move to a total controlled digital system will not work. And my hope is the faster it cannot work, the better for all of us. The danger is enough places don't realize the danger and go along with it, and the thing starts to build up steam. You know, if you look again at the G20 meeting in September last year, you know, you have Russia, China, India all on board and pledging allegiance to the BIS implementation. So I think that's why the faster people can understand the ultimate goal and danger of the system, and that they're dealing, you're not, when you, I used to tell people, look, just pretend that this is an alien invasion because the people who are implementing this now look at us as if we are a different species. They have no empathy. You know, you look at them and you think, oh, it's a human like me. And this paper that these wonderful group wrote, you know, it's being reasonable and looking at the people ultimately running this system as people like me. And you have to understand, no, they're looking at us. They're saying, as a coup, we want to take a human from an individual with liberty by divine authority and turn them into a livestock who can be tracked and harvested like a barrel of oil or a chicken. They see us as a fundamental economic resource to be harvested. And it's our, you know, it's our ideas and our minds to be harvested. It's our energy to be harvested, and literally our physical bodies to be harvested. This is why slave trafficking and sex trafficking and organ harvesting are on the rise, you know, because the rackets run those businesses, and that is their attitude. And you have to understand, part of their lack of empathy is their ability to get other humans for a nice profit to go along and finance or implement the system. Part of the way they've engineered the financial system is I get Alistair and his wife to feel good about themselves and their morals and their, you know, their spiritual practice, while I get them in their retirement savings and their pension fund to finance the rackets. You know, so you practice the golden rule when it comes to what you do, but when it comes to what you finance the rackets.
Okay, so what can we do to help ourselves while all this is going on?
Okay, so the first thing you can do is to simply understand, you know, it's great to go through the complexity of what the technology can do and what they're proposing and then where it can evolve to and go, but it's important to make it simple. And the simple thing is, the people behind the people doing this in New Zealand are looking for total control of your money, and through controlling your money, everything you do in your life. So if they want to mandate a healthcare policy, if they want to mandate a travel policy, they can implement it simply from central headquarters to your money. They want total control. And this is a coup where the bankers get to run everything. They get to run the entire fiscal side of the house, taxation without representation. So once you understand the simple goal, you don't get caught up in the complexity. The first thing you do is walk back the digital system. So use cash and make it clear to the central bank. You know, it was your governor, in fact, who stood up after the cyclone and said, thank God we had cash. Otherwise, we would have been toast. Right. If you come to Solari, we have a memo called Financial Transaction Freedom. What is it? What threatens it? And what we can do about it? And it lists literally hundreds of different things you and your political representatives can do about it. And I recommend it to you. But one of the reasons that you don't want an all digital system is that you get a cyclone and you're in real trouble. Okay. So it's not just central control. It's, you know, it's environmental and energy issues as well. Okay, so the first thing you can do is you can use cash. But the other thing is you can make it impossible to implement a social credit system by rolling back the digital systems. Put your phone in a Faraday bag. Stop using it. Stop using QR codes. Stop, you know, just walk back the thing. Saskia Hopkins always says, add as much frisk in as possible. You know, when I walk into a restaurant, if they you know, require a QR code and they want to, I said, well, I'm out. Bye. You should see the look on their face. I flew into Amsterdam last year and I walked into a Starbucks because I wanted coffee. I was flying all night and I didn't sleep. I walked in and I said, I want whatever the coffee was I ordered. And he said, we don't take cash, because he could see from looking, I was wearing blue jeans and a blazer. I was probably going to pay him with cash. And I said, well, I want coffee. I don't want surveillance. So I left and went over to the HEMA to buy my coffee. So push back on the digital systems. The other thing is, you know, create independent income, support other people creating income, and make sure in every aspect of your life, whether it's your personal life, your professional life, what you do, who you work with, try and only do business with people who have integrity. I mean, real integrity. You want to do business with businesses that make money by helping you succeed instead of putting you in a digital concentration camp.
There's one last thing I want to point out for our listeners before we go, because we are running out of time now, and we have talked about some pretty dystopian ideas here today. But I would like to give a little bit of hope as well, because there are examples around the world of how central bankers introducing the ideas haven't always had it their own way. And the biggest example of that is Nigeria, where they introduced a CBDC, and then they took away the money, they took away the cash system, and it all collapsed in 3.5 months, didn't it?
Yeah, so we have a great interview at Solari of one of the reporters who's really studied and covered what happened in Nigeria. Nigeria, the benefit that Nigeria enjoyed was you still had many, many people with a much more self-sufficient, resilient economy. And so when they had to suddenly go to operating by barter and trade with absolutely no money, because they outlawed the existing cash and just went to a CBDC, people were able to survive because they had family and community networks. And that's why you want to build those resilient family and community networks, because, you know, in a situation like this, if you don't have that, we're talking about death. If you look at the rape of Russia that happened in 89 and 90 or in the Eastern European countries where they didn't have that, literally, you know, you had massive depopulation. It was frightening. And that's when you do these kind of shock economic treatments, that can happen. It happened when Modi went to, you know, killing some of the big bills in India. It was terrible, the destruction of small business and other things that happened. So the more you can build that resiliency, there's one wonderful Swiss doctor who, after COVID, said, the currency of the future will be relationships of trust. And in a world where they're trying to do CBDC, you know, don't worry about money, worry about who your relationships are. And when the boom comes, as it will, because they're going to try various shocks in the process, who can you trust? And it's those relationships of trust that will make things go. And ultimately, in a place like New Zealand, if you can build analog and through mesh networks, our own digital systems with our own encryption and you know, ways of creating privacy, you know, we can build our own networks that make us much more resilient, but it all organizes around individual people and relationships of trust.
And with that, let's leave it there, because that's a really nice way to end it. I knew I could trust you to come up with a nice ending to it, Catherine. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay, well, Alistair, just remember, I love New Zealand. I love Kiwis. If there's any place in the world that deserves to be enjoy and flourish under human liberty, it's New Zealand. So my prayers are with you and your fellow citizens. May you be free and stay free, and may this CBDC thing crash and burn as it so deserves to do.
That's Catherine Austin-Fitz, a world-renowned investment banker, a former US public official, and a whistleblower of massive financial fraud, giving us her take on what a CBDC really is and what it would mean for us here in New Zealand. And if you'd like to read and hear more from Catherine, please do visit the Solari Report, which she owns and operates at www.solari.com. And that's where you'll find a treasure trove of financial knowledge and Catherine's thoughts on all of these things and more. That's www.solari.com. That's S-O-L-A-R-I.com. What makes Catherine's testimony so powerful is that she backs it up with the words of people from the very organizations who are pushing governments all over the world to implement CBDCs. The truth lies in those words of Augustin Karstens, the head of the BIS, who said, "The key difference with the CBDC is that the central bank will have complete control." Those are his words, not Catherine's and not mine. And then there were the words of Bo Lee, the deputy managing director of the IMF, who said they will be able to control who holds a CBDC and how it can be spent. I don't know about you, but the Reserve Bank's most recent renaming of the New Zealand CBDC to a catchy title of digital cash rings a little bit hollow after hearing those words, because none of it sounds to me like cash at all. Rather, it sounds like a digital prison that we need to resist now before it's too late. And we can all start doing that by putting in our submissions to the Reserve Bank before the end of July. My name is Alistair Harding, and you've been listening to Our Digital Future only on Reality Check Radio.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.